You are listening to Arise, Actualize Your Spiritual Potential, Lessons from the Bhagavad Gita, Part 8, Three Kinds of Faith.
Today's message is the eighth in this series inspired by the Bhagavad Gita. The title of today's message is Three Kinds of Faith. And the theme is the focus on living the spiritually conscious life. So we have to ask ourselves, well, what does that look like to live a spiritually conscious life? For me, it looks like having sufficient inner light to be able to choose well, to make good choices in my life, to be able to see the likely outcome, the likely consequences of my thoughts, my speech, and my actions. To me, the spiritually conscious life is living with that quality of awareness that allows me to see the trajectory of what I'm thinking, what I'm saying, what I'm doing. And it also is having the courage to stay the course of living by love and living by truth, regardless of the obstacles, seeming obstacles to that, or the risks involved. To not succumb to what I would call losing my soul, losing what I value most deeply, not giving out, not neglecting to honor who I am and who you are and what I know we are here for. I've chosen this verse from the writings of St. Clare from the Christian tradition to express the spirit of what this is for me, to be living the spiritually conscious life. And it's on the front of your study lesson today. Go forward, secure and with joy on the path of happiness. With swift pace and light step, move freely so that even your steps stir no dust. Let no one dissuade you from living in the Spirit of the Lord. We could say, let no one dissuade you from living in the Spirit of peace. Let no one dissuade you from living in the Spirit of love. We find in the Dhammapada the sayings of the Buddha, teachings here on the spiritually conscious life. One who is awake finds joy in the stillness of meditation and in the sweetness of surrender. Hard it is to be born. Hard it is to live. Harder still to hear of the way. Hard to rise, follow, and awake. Hard it is to be born, hard it is to live, harder still to hear of the way, and hard to rise, follow, and awake. Yet the teaching is simple. Do what is right. Be pure. At the end of the way is freedom. Until then, patience is good. If you wound or grieve another, you have not learned detachment. Offend in neither word nor deed. Eat with moderation. Live in your heart. Seek the highest consciousness. Once we are aware of the goal of life, to awaken to self and God realization and to live in harmony with our essential nature, we dedicate ourselves then to those spiritual practices and lifestyle choices which are appropriate to our purpose. We know that we're made in the image of God, and we want to begin to act like that. That's what the teaching is. It says, know who you are, and then begin to make choices that are in harmony with expressing the beauty and the wonder and the power and the glory and the delight of who you are. And the scriptures recommend a holistic approach to this, which are twofold. Meditate and contemplate higher realities. Stay in touch with truth and truth teachings. And then apply what you know about spiritual truth in your life in ways that are supportive of your total well-being. Enhance the inner flow through your meditation and contemplation of scripture and spiritual teachings, and maintain equanimity in the world. Don't lose your balance when you are engaged in relationships and work. Don't forget who you are and who others are. In the teachings of Jesus, this is stated as to love God with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind, all of your strength, and your neighbor as yourself, the inner life, and then life in the world. To stay this course of maintaining our balance, the Gita tells us that cultivating a sattvic or uplifting lifestyle is the key, because sattvic choices will be most in harmony with our soul nature. Now, if you're just here for the first time today, that might be a new word to you. If you've been following the series and the seven other lessons, you've heard about that. I just want to take a moment to review about the three qualities that we find these teachings in the Gita. Basically, it says there are three qualities that permeate all of nature that make creation possible. There's the quality of sattva, and this quality is a principle of luminosity. And it brings peace, and it supports clarity and greater awareness. This is the quality closest to our soul nature. Then there's the quality called rajas, and that quality contributes to restlessness, to passion, and to desire or aggression. Then there's the quality that is called tamas, which is the quality of inertia, and it has a clouding effect on our mind and consciousness. It dulls our perception and dampens our energy. When our life is out of balance, we can see it in the expression of these qualities. If we know what they are, we can begin to identify which quality is predominating in our choices, and we can make a new choice. In today's readings from the Gita in chapter 17, there's an exploration of how to identify the influence of these qualities in very practical areas of our life, in our worship, in the food that we choose, and in the practice of giving. I've just pulled out some of them for our readings, and we're going to look at how it shows up in the practice of giving. I thought as we're approaching a season where we're doing so much giving, you might like the clues about the qualities related to giving. But I think you'll also enjoy the learning about food, because that's something we appreciate every day. I want to encourage you to go on your own and read chapter 17 and see what it says about food. But for now, let's look at the verses selected for today. We're going to be looking at selected verses from chapter 17 and reading them aloud. The faith of embodied beings is of three kinds. It is sattvic, illuminating, rajasic, self-serving, or tamasic, self-defeating. Now hear of this. Faith is in accord with the basic nature of each person. A person is made of faith. One is what one's faith is. Even the food preferred by all three types is of three kinds, as are their sacrifices, austerities, and gifts. Hear now the distinction between them. A gift is pure when it is given from the heart to the right person at the right time and at the right place, and when we expect nothing in return. But when it is given expecting something in return, or for the sake of a future reward, or when it is given unwillingly, the gift is of rajas, impure. And a gift given to the wrong person at the wrong time and the wrong place, or a gift which comes not from the heart and is given with proud contempt, is a gift of darkness. Steadfastness in sacrifice, austerity, giving, and actions related to these practices is also designated as sattvic. This practical application of the teachings of living a spiritually conscious life occurs in our life day by day, moment by moment, and choice by choice. Today, I want to share a story with you that has moved me tremendously. It's a story told by Dr. Arun Gandhi, the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, and you can also find it in his book called The Legacy of Love. It's a fitting story for today because it demonstrates what it is to make a sattvic choice. It's a story not only about the impact of a parent, but in a broader way about the impact of love. As Arun tells it, it's the story of discovering the depth of his father's love for him, and discovering this when he was 16 years old. And I'm fascinated with this story because of the way I experienced the profound love in it that affected the life and the character formation of this teenage boy. And I also know, when I look at this story, that it was an incident in a life, perhaps not so unlike incidents that we've had in our own lives as teenagers. Remember that time? And it was an incident that could have evoked a vastly different response. And with that different response, a vastly different outcome in the relationship between father and son, and in the life and the values of that youth who was in that formative stage. What happened? What's the story? Arun and his family lived at Phoenix Farm, Mahatma Gandhi's ashram, outside of Durban in South Africa. The ashram was 18 miles outside of the city, but it was isolated by poor quality back roads. It had to take a long time to get there, over an hour by car. On a Saturday, when his father needed to attend a conference in town, he asked the teenaged Arun, who at that time was not old enough to have a driver's license, if he would like to drive him into town. Now, you can imagine yourself as a teenager and that possibility, getting to drive the car into town, not only getting to drive the car, but the opportunity to go from the isolation of being at the ashram to being in town all day. That was pretty exciting. And Arun's mind started to imagine what he could do in the city. And besides thinking about getting together with his friends, high on his list was going to see a Western movie, ideally Roy Rogers or John Wayne. Movies that he knew his own parents would forbid him to see because they were violent. No sooner had he begun this fantasy list of what he would do in town once he dropped his father off, than both his father and his mother gave him their own list of what he was to do while he was in town. From his father, he received the assignment that he was to take the car to the garage for its repair and change of oil and servicing. And from his mother, he got the grocery list. At that time, his mind shifted into how to plan the day the most efficiently so that he could still fit in the movie. He made his plan, which, understandably, he did not discuss with his parents. He dropped his father off at the conference, and his father told him to take care of the chores and come back and pick him up at 5 o'clock. So they could ride home together. Arun then, as a competent 16-year-old, rushed like mad through all of the chores, left the car at the repair shop, and then proceeded to the movie. His plan was to leave at the intermission. But when the intermission came at 3:30 in the afternoon, he felt that there was a big time window there in between the time when he actually had to go and get the car and pick up his dad. He persuaded himself that he could stay just a little bit longer and see into the second movie. Are you anticipating what happened? He became so engrossed in the movie that he lost track of time. When the movie ended at 5:30, he ran to the garage to get the car. It was 6 o'clock when he arrived to pick up his father. And when his father asked him why he was late, he was so embarrassed about what he had done that he lied to his father. And he told his father that the garage didn't have the car ready in time. Since his father had called the garage, he knew that wasn't true. Now, this is a moment, isn't it? It's a very important moment. When we come to a place like this, in a relationship, he knows his son is lying. What does he do? Let's look at the behaviors in light of these qualities in nature that the Gita is telling us about in our studies today. A rajasic choice would be to act out of anger or of fear that sometimes overcomes parents. If he made the rajasic choice, he probably would have told his son how ashamed of him he was. He would have berated him for being so thoughtless. He may even have hit him. That would have been the rajasic choice. Tamasic choice might have looked something like chalking it all up to teenage acting out and ignoring it, not wanting to deal with it, and pretending that he didn't know that Arun was lying, thinking instead about the nice tall drink he'd have when he got home and which DVD he would watch to just get away from it all. That would have been the tamasic choice. But what did he do? Manilal Gandhi made a sattvic choice, a choice that brought peace in its wake, a choice infused with love, a choice that wasn't easy either. But it was based on principle, the principle that he was living by, principle based on truth and love and nonviolence, and his knowing that making a choice based on those principles can bring lasting victory because it transforms the heart. It transforms the heart of the person who makes the choice for love. And oftentimes it transforms the heart of the person who has made the mistake and who is on the end of receiving love given to them at such an occasion. He had faith in the principle, he had faith in God, he had faith in himself. And most of all, I think he had faith in his son. He had faith in the goodness of Arun. What did he do? He told Arun that he was sorry that his son had lied to him. He said, obviously, as a father, he had failed to instill in his son the confidence and the courage that was needed to tell the truth without fear. He saw the breakdown not as a problem with Arun, but as a problem with his own parenting. And when he saw this, he told Arun that he would do penance for this shortcoming so that he could find out what went wrong. And as his penance, he decided he would walk home, and he got out of the car. And no amount of apologies from Arun could get his father back into the car. Arun was mortified. Can you imagine? He couldn't walk with his father because he had to bring the car home. And he couldn't just drive away and leave his father there. It was also nearly dark, and the lights of the car illumined the road so his father could see. For 5.5 hours, Arun crawled the car behind his walking father, intensely aware of his father's suffering, walking 18 miles and becoming increasingly more aware of the pain and suffering that his mother and sisters would be feeling, worrying about why they were so late. When his mother and sisters saw the car creeping up the hill, they figured that something had gone wrong with the car, and only later had they learned what had happened. That night, Arun brought a bowl of warm water for his father, and he washed his feet and soaked them. He apologized to both of his parents and promised he would never lie again. When Arun Gandhi wrote about this incident 50 years later, it was still fresh in his mind. It's breathtaking, isn't it? A choice made not out of anger, not out of fear, not out of wanting to turn away, but a choice of courage and a choice of love. His actions demonstrated his beliefs. In this chapter of the Gita, we all read together this morning, one is what one's faith is. Let our faith be in love, and let us choose love. And now, let us read together our affirmation. I am always aware of my true nature. I am always aware of my true nature. I am serene, and joy fills my heart and my mind. I am serene, and joy fills my heart and my mind. I am a life-giving spirit. I am a life-giving spirit. Let's try that one again as we feel the power that we have to give life and to give love. I am a life-giving spirit. I celebrate the true joy of giving without expectation of return. I celebrate the true joy of giving without expectation of return. I am abundance, prosperity, and goodness overflowing. I am abundance, prosperity, and goodness overflowing. My divine nature gives without reservation and loves without hesitation. My divine nature gives without reservation and loves without hesitation. Amen.
The Center for Spiritual Enlightenment is a ministry in the spiritual tradition of Kriya Yoga that offers a time-tested method for self and God realization for people from all religious backgrounds. The CSE ministry is dedicated to spiritual awakening by fostering the presence of peace in our community, in the world, and in the hearts of individuals. For more information about CSE or to inquire about Reverend O'Brien's speaking schedule or publications, visit our website at www.csecenter.org or call 408-283-0221 or write to the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment, 1146 University Avenue, San Jose, California, 95126. Gratitude to Chi Chen for music from her CD, One Cello, One World, courtesy of Urban Chi Music.